freedomradio.com, and make sure you also go cruise out to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, specifically something I'll be getting into after the break. In California, you may have been stopped by a cop and been given a $600 or $800 ticket. That's coming from George Heminger, our man on the street in California. That's just sick, man. Unbelievable. And worse, what was it? I believe somebody was calling for mass vaccinations. Ah, here we are. The American Academy of Pediatrics. Make the flu shot mandatory. That's right. Just in case your kids weren't autistic enough. We're going to vaccinate them all. And on top of that, I guess this is probably relates to the other one. It's probably the cause of it. Almost 2 million swine flu jabs went unused. That from Claire O'Sullivan from the Irish Examiner. Almost 2 million of the jabs bought by the health service executive during the pandemic scare were never used. And I'm pretty sure the pharmaceutical industry is pretty happy about the fact that, hey, we sold all our products and we got rich, but I'm sure they're really upset about, hey, our products weren't used on the population to make them all sick. In other news, the Illuminati symbolism in former Disney girl Belinda Igotzia. In previous articles, covered Illuminati symbolism found in the music industry of America, Asia, and Eastern Europe. And this article looks at the symbolism found in one of Latin America's major pop stars, Belinda. We'll examine her past role with the Disney Cheetah Girls and her new video, Egoista. Isn't it nice to have all your children brainwashed by Disney? And I was just talking to my girlfriend yesterday about the ridiculous... What was it? Oh, yeah. Have you ever watched a Disney movie and you notice that almost every single cartoon Disney movie, the parent dies or the main character is in a single parent relationship or in a no parent relationship or something like that? What's Disney got against parents, man? Crazy. But it matters not. And also, this on September the 9th, Insider says, we're entering the age of Satan. The sheep will now have the truth, and we know that they'll do nothing. In any event, it is far too late. There is no escape. From Aloysius of Volksdyke. I don't agree with that. But we'll be back after the crash. This is the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Our special guest, very special guest, I must say, is somewhat of a thorn in the side of shall we say, those who wish to remain undetected and make an awful lot of money off of fraud. She's an investigator. Her name is Grace Hayden, and she's even a licensed private investigator. How about that, ladies and gentlemen? And she works incredibly hard, and over the last few days, she'd been rushed off her feet. So I thought we'd just have her on the show, you know, and have a wee bit of a cackle at the elite's expense. Grace Hayden, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Hi, Vinnie. Nice to be on it.
Fabulous, darling. Now, I wonder if, even after my intro, that you'd explain a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do so the listeners can be brought up to speed.
Okay. Well, many, many years ago, I joined the New Zealand Police, and I was in the police for 15 years. I was a prosecuting sergeant, and I'd done my time in the criminal investigations branch, and then I became a mother, as you do. And many years later, when the kids were growing up, I thought, well, what does a former police sergeant do? And of course, the world had changed by this stage, and I was looking at investigations. So rather than be at the bottom of the cliff with a lot of my Mr. Plod colleagues, I decided to go into verification, which has turned out to be something which no one appears to do in New Zealand. And through that, I seem to pick out so many people who think that they can get past the system. And unfortunately, when I do pick them out, they kind of get upset. I've been sued twice, one still ongoing, and another one was from an American citizen who really took advantage of our system. He's now hiding out in Honolulu. So I do make life-changing investigations into people's lives.
Well, let's hope that that your skills are put to good use. Now, in New Zealand, we have somewhat of a corruption problem. And it turns out that the corruption problems that we have here are actually relatively amusing at the scale of the fraud being perpetrated. And just of late, you've said that the recent local council has been contracting to contractors that don't exist or something?
I was 4 years ago, I questioned the existence of an organisation called the Animal Welfare Institute of New Zealand. They were actually the crowd that gave the false end title to the Lord of the Rings trilogy, saying that no animals were hurt or injured in the making of the movie. That end title actually belongs to the American Humane Association, and this so-called, in brackets, organisation chose to give it this end title so that people all around the world would think that the trilogy had been very kind to animals. That was not true. There were lots of horses that were injured, and some died in a stampede, and Gandalf's horse itself had problems, but they kind of needed it to keep going through the scene, so they kind of pushed this poor animal through. I was approached by someone who was working for the Waitakere City Council, and she had concerns that the person who ran this Animal Welfare Institute of New Zealand, which I'll call AWINS, and her boss were apparently one and the same person. So I opened a can of worms, but I didn't know I was sort of hitting high-level corruption. And what I asked was, why does this organisation not exist as a charity or as a organisation on the country's registers like it should do? So as a result, I got sued.
And then,
they took me to court for defamation. And I was kind of gobsmacked when the judge said to me, Mrs. Hayden, you'll do as I tell you, because otherwise you'll be bankrupted and this your life will be made miserable. What I'd actually done is, with some others, I had registered the name on the society's register. And this proved conclusively that the statements that this person had made to the Minister of Agriculture, that the organisation was registered and existed, was untrue. So even bringing this to the attention of the Ministry of Agriculture and Fisheries, I have had 4 years of banging my head against the brick wall. The whole exercise has cost me well in excess of $100,000, and this man is still wanting about another $150,000 from me in penalties, which he has managed to get against me in the court by denying me a right to my defence. Now, as you can understand, that if you are charged with defamation and you are speaking the truth, then when you don't have a defence, it's kind of impossible to prove that you're speaking the truth. But funnily enough, through their own evidence, they proved that they were, you know, well, what I had said was the truth, but the court system doesn't seem to accommodate this. It's sort of hard to believe that in 2010, New Zealand has got a court system which is based on a process rather than on evidence. And evidence seems to mean nothing if it's not placed before the court in the right context. And because I wasn't given an opportunity for a hearing, this other guy stood up and without any confirmation or any corroboration was believed. What I then did is I managed to get down to Wellington, where a central government is kept. And this was just after our last elections, and I had access to a huge number of files which showed that this person had actually told lies in court. So having been an ex-prosecutor, I had no trouble throwing the file together and took it into the police, who promptly told me that there was no corroboration on my part that this guy had told lies, even though the folder was like two great big thick folders full. And that they wouldn't be proceeding with it. So it's really, really hard to prove corruption in New Zealand because the powers that be who have stuffed up in the first place by not verifying do everything in their power to cover up.
Yeah, this is what I found very interesting. I mean, an acquaintance of mine was like a total fraudster. You may have heard of this case. Shane Wenzel went down on 36 charges of fraud, and he assaulted myself and my friend. And we sent in the police, the video of the assault, right? And they said, "Oh, don't worry about it." You know, and later on, the SFO gets him down on 36 charges of fraud. Now, this comes off the back, of course, of a wonderful expose 2 days ago by 60 Minutes of our New Zealand defence. What's his name? The scientific advisor to the Defence Force. And you were telling me that basically the process of verification of people after being interviewed for a job no longer exists.
Well, it doesn't no longer exist. It never existed in the first place. We've got a really unusual system in New Zealand of recruiting, and basically it's matchmaking on aptitude. So what we've got is we've got a recruiter who comes along and puts an advertisement in a newspaper based on the job description that's been given to them. Then all these people send their CVs in, and the recruiter goes through and says, "Oh, yes, this one looks good, that one looks good." And then they interview people. So basically it comes down to your ability to sit down in an interview and pass it. So you've got someone who could be excellent, excellent in their job, but is not a great communicator. Well, he can pack his bags because he's not going to get it. But the guy who's the bullshit artist, who can lay it on thick, who can sit there and talk his way out of a paper bag, he is going to be the kingpin. The next process is that these people are recommended to the person who's going to hire them. And they say, what we do is a security check. So the security check usually means a criminal history check. So it gets sent off to the police, who go through and say, oh, yes, this person's fine. He's got no previous convictions. But the mere fact that the guy came from the UK the week before and has got no convictions in New Zealand is entirely beside the point because, you know, quite often they don't check the overseas ones. They rely on immigration to have done that. So there's this whole step in the process where the recruiters are tied up by legislation, and they can only recruit within the bounds of the Human Rights Act and the Privacy Act, which means that they can only approach the referees that have been given on the actual CV, and they can't make any independent inquiries. Now, if I worked for someone and didn't get on with them, I'm not going to give them as a referee, but you bet your bottom dollar I can find someone or three people, who can give me a glowing reference. So this whole thing is sort of artificial. But what I do in my pre-employment screening, and the pre-employment screen is done at the invitation of the person who is taking the risk. And in this case, it would have been the Defence Force, but of course, they don't do these screens. So for the banks and the people that I do work for, they approach me and they say, right, we're going to want to employ this person. We've made the job offer subject to them passing your pre-employment screen. So I send them some forms and I say, sign your life away. You actually give me the authority to check everything out and go anywhere and ask anyone. And then I can get right through their CV, find where the holes are, find the people who didn't like them and perhaps have a more honest opinion of them. And then I'll put a report together for the employer who makes an assessment on that basis. Much better idea, and that way this guy would have been found out.
And the Defence Force, by contrast, says, "Hey, you said that you were on the English bobsled team. Come on in, work for the New Zealand Defence Force."
I find that really hard to believe. Like, don't the New Zealand Defence Force carry out an intelligence background intelligence reports on people? Wouldn't they get?
Well,
They have a partnership with
SIS.
MI5, for instance, and MI6. So, wouldn't they? Yeah.
Well, the thing
Wouldn't
is,
they? Sorry.
those reports mightn't exist, you see, and that person would have been clean. There would have been no detrimental information on him. He might not have come to the notice of MI5, he might not have come to the notice of the police, and therefore he's a clean skin. What they don't do is check the CV for, things which are untrue. They don't check the CV against reality. And this is another anomaly about our police criminal history checks, is that first of all, you have to be convicted. And in many, many employment situations, because of our employment rules and regulations being what they are, there are many confidentiality clauses, and people who have actually been caught with their hand in the till being given money just to go because it is the more economic option. And so they get a clean slate, they don't get convicted, they get kicked out the door, and they get a glowing report. So what does it do? It just perpetrates corruption. So this person goes off with their beautiful clean reference, and there are people left in the workplace thinking, oh, what's the worst case scenario? And then they go and dip their hands in the till. But the police criminal conviction, the employer actually has to make a conscious decision to have this person charged. They will probably have to employ a private investigator, therefore incur more costs so that this person can be prosecuted, because the police actually don't do much in the way of fraud inquiries. It is too much of a low priority, because what happens in the police is that the land transport and the accident compensation actually fund the police service as in a patrol car, and their duties are to those two departments. And that's why the police are there when someone is assaulted, and the police are there for road accidents. No one funds fraud, and therefore we've got relatively few people on it, and they expect a complete investigated file from a private investigator before they take action. And of course, that costs a huge amount of money, which employers are not prepared to outlay on top of the losses they've already incurred. Giving the person 3 grand, a boot out the door, and a CV, or as I've heard, employ a recruitment agent to do reverse headhunting. where a recruitment agent goes to a company and says, I have just the person for you. And that way the problem is recruited into another company and hopefully the opposition, and they get rid of their problem. And that's how we deal with it. It's like sweeping dirt under a carpet.
Well, you get rid of your problem by making it your competition's, and therefore it gets rid of your competition, which is a big problem for them, but it's a big advantage for you.
Yes, I hope they do think that they can send it to their opposition, because I think that would be wonderful, wouldn't it? But I don't believe that anyone should get away scot-free, and our system just allows people to commit crime and remain undetected. And I still think that crime should take priority over those little moments that we forget that, you know, we're going downhill with the wind behind us and we've gone over the speed limit. We seem to prosecute people for the minor stuff, the stuff which we do without intent, and we leave the big serious stuff alone. And I think somewhere along the line we've got it upside down.
I totally agree. I see the law as a system designed to come down on the average person like a ton of bricks with all its force and weight, using the police to some extent as pawns and allowing the super criminals to run the place. And the same, I think the FBI and the state should be investigating Halliburton and Diancourt running child kidnapping rings. I think New Zealand police and security forces should be investigating John Key's background and the model of fractional reserve banking that allows banks to rob New Zealanders blind every day. I don't think the system is worth defending. That's just my opinion. I think why I'm trying to defend a broke system.
That's the crux of it. It is a broke system, and all it's doing is everything comes down to economy, and it's far cheaper to give a ticket to someone than it is to deal with the serious problems. But in the end, we will pay for it. It's false economy, but they always seem to work for the cheapest.
Okay, thank you, Grace. We'll have you back after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Grace Hayden from Verisure Private Investigations. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Back in a moment. Divided we fall, unity, please don't desert me.
Bloodlust and desire, carefree and individualized, the colors of your power, let love come shining through your eyes. We can be, we can be more than ever people, more than ever people, more than ever people.
If there wasn't so many corrupt scumbags running the country, we could be more than ever people if there wasn't so much fraud. Speaking of amusement and fraud, Grace has a funny story to tell us about evidence.
Well, this happened many, many years ago when I was a young cop in Whangarei. This is back in days when the police in New Zealand wore the old black uniform and women had just gone into the police for 24 hours. Like before that, women sat in a little office at the side and were brought out when the little old lady had to cross the road or if someone had to be fingerprinted of the female gender. But we had a great big liquor seizure. So all of these cans of beer were seized from an event, and they were put in our exhibit room, which was down in the cell block. So after that, our prisoners became extremely happy and no one wanted bail. And it sort of went on for about a week, and all they were asking for was toothpaste, which was somewhat unusual. So it was only when the toilets packed up that someone realised what was going on, and there was this channel down the back which sort of allowed water to flow from one cell to the next, and they were getting their hands in this little channel thing into the exhibit room, which was next to the day room of the cell block, and they were pulling out these cans one at a time and crunching them and putting them behind the toilet systems. So party time at the cell block, and yes, it was quite funny. That was in a case where we couldn't produce the evidence anymore because the prisoners had drunk it.
Oh, mate, for goodness sake. Now, there's the problem with locking people up is that they'll do everything that they can to subvert you, you know, give them an opportunity and they'll exploit it, right? And at the same token, this is precisely the same with the rest of society. Whatever you can get away with, you probably will get away with, you know what I'm saying? And I wanted to talk about police corruption and how hard it is to bring police corruption to the police's attention.
Well, I had an incident beginning of the year, and our focus appears to be on the quick and easy traffic matters. And, you know, as I said before, economy comes into it, and economy comes into it for the person who is being charged as well. And so often I hear lawyers tell people to plead guilty or to pay up because it is the cheaper option. Now, when you consider that lawyers cost $250 an hour up, and you're going to be spending at least something like about 20, 30 hours for even the smallest case, admitting something you haven't done and paying the fine, especially when it's something like $150 for a traffic ticket, becomes very viable. So our system produces people who will plead guilty to something they didn't do. Now, because I'm somewhat of a rebel in these things and I have the experience, I had an incident which I challenged. I was coming back in my car on my own, and there was a vehicle in front of me which was weaving all over the road, and I decided it wasn't safe to be behind this vehicle, so I overtook it where it was safe to do so, because he was really going slow. A little while later, they came alongside me at an overtaking lane, and there was a young guy leaning out the window, and they were trying to shunt me off the road. So having done many, many miles on the road and being a bit of a confident driver in my own opinion, but having driven more than the average person, I put my foot down and got in front of the vehicle and overtook the vehicle in front of me so that we had a bit of space. I then had about 20 or 30 kilometres of windy gorge-type road, so I just sat in the stream of traffic, thought no more about it. Way up the road, I have a police car approaches me in the opposite direction, and it does a U-turn and pulls me over. The cop comes out and tells me that there have been a couple of calls made about me, about my unsafe driving. And I said to him, well, I don't think so. I think it's very, very improbable. But if there has been a call made, it would have been made by this man in the white van who tried to run me off the road. And he's probably using the police as a method of extracting his road rage into a different level. So the police said he would go away and he would make inquiries. He said that there were two drivers and there were definitely two different cell call numbers, and that he would check with both of them. Well, 2 days later, he phoned me and he said he'd spoken to both the drivers and that I was extremely lucky that I wasn't going to be charged with dangerous driving in the gorge. And I said, well, I wasn't driving dangerously, but unfortunately I can't prove anything apart from the fact that I was sitting in traffic behind other vehicles. So the ticket came, and it was for dangerous overtaking for $150 in an area which was in the middle of nowhere, some 5 kilometres short of where he'd stopped me, but it was also 5 kilometres north of where the man in the white van had turned off the road. So I made a request to the police for all the information, and I got all their data, and it actually showed that the time I was charged, I was actually stationary with the cop and therefore couldn't have been driving and overtaking this undefined vehicle. So I brought it to their attention and said, you have no evidence and I am not guilty. They said they would go ahead with the charges. So I asked for a review and they said, no, they weren't going to give me a review. They would go ahead with the charges. I then went to the local police who'd be prosecuting it and I pointed out the obvious hole in their case and also the fact that the cop hadn't interviewed anyone until 6 weeks after the event. And he'd only interviewed one person, and that was the driver of the white van. Some 2 weeks later, they then interviewed the other one in the van when it turned out that they were the only two witnesses, the same people who had tried to push me off the road. I continued bringing this to the attention of the police and even phoned the senior sergeant at Waihee, who I'd used to work with when I was in the police myself. And he did me a little bit of a favour. He managed to get my court hearing brought forward and put on one date. Otherwise, I would have had to have travelled down to Thames, a distance of well over 100 kilometres, to plead not guilty and then travel down again on a second occasion for the actual hearing. So I actually only had the one hearing and I went down, defended it, and because of my background and my ability to cross-examine and pull things to bits, I won. I don't know whether the average person could have done that because it's quite an overwhelming experience having to cross-examine people in the court. And the JPs who heard the matter agreed that there was no evidence. So what I've done is I've taken this matter through to the Independent Police Conducts Commission and I've asked for the police to look into the matter, or rather them to look into the matter. And what they did is sent a police officer up here, very blatantly, who has admitted that the police were remiss in reviewing the file. And all they are doing is counselling the cop and his boss. Now, I believe that this cop, Constable Connors, should be hung out and dry because he knew what I was telling him. And I am not clairvoyant. And I could not have predicted that the phone call came from that white van had it not been for the experience that I'd had with it. So obviously there are police officers out there who give people tickets without any evidence, without any reason at all, because this way they get their revenue. Apparently I'm the first person to have complained, and I guess it is because I have spent a huge amount of time proving my innocence. Only because I wanted to make a point. Otherwise, I would have paid the $150 and been done with it. So this is where we get false statistics, and this is where our system is completely warped. It costs more to defend a matter than it does to actually pay up. And that just encourages, you know, it's ass about face.
Totally agree. I've had similar incidents, in fact, probably a lot more mysterious and some strange goings on too, and it ended up with me sending multiple complaints to the Police Complaints Authority over being hassled by a particular constable in my town, and them saying, oh, because it was an open case, they couldn't do anything, and the case ran on for over 9 months, false charges of me assaulting a police officer, which were later dropped by the police when they realised they had no evidence. And I had over 6 charges anyway, and they ended up, I ended up defending myself. I had a little bit of help from just lawyers who were listening in on the in the gallery, decided to help me in the break and things like this. But overall, I defended myself, and the police were trying to bargain with me, saying, oh, we'll drop certain charges. I said, which ones? They said, oh, it doesn't matter. I said, yeah, that's because they're all BS and you guys have got nothing on any of them, so you haven't got a strongest case. They're all weak points of yours. I'm not going to bargain with you guys. And I ended up getting off all them, but that's after 9 months of court. Luckily, I was working in downtown Auckland about 500 meters away from the court building at the time, and so I could take time out to go up there, in and out for status hearings and then defended hearings. And the average person doesn't. And the cops all thought I was a weirdo for wanting to challenge them and plead not guilty. And all the duty solicitors tell you to plead guilty because that's the easy way out, and you're never going to get off this, and you'll be up for thousands of dollars if you plead not guilty and then you're found guilty. So they use this pragmatic stance. And, particular cop, I won't name him, but he needs to be hung out to dry. And I told him I'd get rid of him out of this town, and I did. I did run him out of the town, and now he's a police officer in Warkworth, hassling the good people up there.
Wasn't this the one who became...
Did get got rid of. Yeah.
Wasn't this What's the that? Guy you were telling me about on Waiheke Island? There was a whole bunch of... there was this drug house or something like that, and everybody knew about it and told the police, and the police did nothing, and then the guy who was supposed to be investigating, you know, chief police officer or whatever, wound up in a high position of the drug enforcement squad in Auckland.
Yes, that police officer is still actually the local sergeant, in fact. So I won't say anything there, but no, there were two other individuals from the Metropolitan Freemason Police Unit in London, and they joined the New Zealand Police Force and were shifted to Waiheke Island and made a terror of themselves. One of them went down on rape charges. He's since moved to Hamilton, was in a mental institution. And the other retained his sanity, wasn't involved in anything like rape, but instead just harassed people like myself no end, took cars off people for no reason, come in my house a few times for no reason without warrants, decided to beat me up in a car park one night and then say I assaulted him. So anyway, he knows who he is. If he's listening, you got yours, you got beaten up too. And you got kicked off the island, and you lost your job with the police in the end. But anyway, but this is what I'm saying. This is something that's inherent in the system, and there's these scumbags running around all over the place, and they come up against lesser people, if you will, people who aren't psychopaths with vendettas like me, who'll go after them, and they just run amok.
Hey, and isn't this the it's the crux of the issue, right, is that good cops are hard to find, okay? And this is not isolated only to police force. I think that this is proficient in every single professional occupation, that the best people in there, the honourable ones, are in fact the most difficult to find, and the useless, most pathetic and dodgy ones seem to stick out like a sore thumb. And yet, nobody cuts that thumb off, because they need it to give the thumbs up to the organization that's corrupt. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, and we'll be right back after the break.
I got some so-called friends, they'll smile right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Who's that? Are you on? I'm flying a JFK. My heart goes boom, boom, boom. I know that customs man, he's gonna take me to that little room. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Who's side
you on? Welcome back. You are listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. I am Will. Vinny will be right? back with us in a few seconds.
Right back. On
He's
top.
Back.
Yes. Well, it turns out that Grace has something very special for us. You have an equation for corruption. It's like the E equals MC squared of lying and fraudster.
Yes, I have. I can't lay claim to it being mine, but I came across it and I found it fits just about any situation. If the ingredients fit and you can tick all the boxes, then you have a potential for corruption. And generally, I find that you do have corruption. Well, the equation is that corruption equals monopoly. So you look at organisations like the police, like our Metro Water, our councils, anything that has a monopoly. Then you give the people who've got monopoly discretion, like we do our police officers. Yes, I will give them a ticket. No, I won't give them a ticket. And then the crucial part is that you don't give them accountability. So when people don't have accountability, they are free to do whatever they like. So the equation is corruption equals monopoly plus discretion minus accountability. I think it's rather clever.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
Nail on the head. I think you've, the sad thing is with the police, you find sort of two camps of people. You have those people who say, oh, look, they have a difficult job. I wouldn't want to be doing that. We need to give them all the powers they can get. They should have AK-47s and Kevlar vests. And you should shut up. And you get that sort of person. And then you get everyone who's, and you get the other guys who are like, F the pigs, you know, and they just have no regard for them whatsoever and they want to spit on them and things like that. I'm somewhere in between, you know. I want to spit on them too sometimes, but I'm somewhere in between that, no, we should respect the police and because they are good cops. In my experience, you'd probably know a lot more about this than I would, and I'd like to hear your comments on it, but it's a lot of the carpetbag and filth from Europe we have here. Sadly, from my hometown of London, they come to New Zealand and they just think everyone's a hardcore criminal dealing heroin, and that's the way they view people. And everyone's a suspect, and they just walk around, they drive around with their paranoid eyes, swinging around after people everywhere. And I think they have a different approach. Whereas there are some community orientated New Zealand police who don't do a bad job, considering the circumstances that, you know, they're government pawns. Well, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's not actually the cops' fault, it's the system's fault. And really, with so many government departments, they should just put a bomb under it and blow it up and start again. When I joined the police, it was a service. And we used to go to people's houses, actually, check their back doors while they were on holiday to see whether or not, you know, the house was still secure. It was a service. But when we had Rogernomics come in and we turned things into businesses, we also turned the police into a business. Now, the police should never be a business. Its focus now is on making money. And the focus on the police should always be to provide a service to keep the society corruption free, to keep crime under control. We had John Banks, who came in as our Minister of Police in the late 80s, early 90s, who said, yes, what we'll do is we'll increase the police numbers. So he amalgamated the police with the Ministry of Transport. Now, I'll tell you something funny about recruitment in the police in the 70s. We had to sit an IQ test. If you passed the IQ test, you were selected for the police. If you were of a lower IQ, you went into the Ministry of Transport. If you didn't
pass the That explains a lot.
Yeah, there's more to come. Roadrunners. If you didn't come to that level, you became an Auckland City or Wellington City traffic cop. And if you didn't make that grade, you became a meter maid. We have meter maids who are inspectors in the police today. And that explains where the intelligence quota has gone.
You're right.
I love what Greg Hallett says about this, that with traffic cops, their only IQ is in their moustache. And apparently police create 80% of all crime. And these are things like creating traffic tickets out of nowhere and all of this. And they solve about 40% of all crime.
Well, you see, of course, that's the other thing, is when we made the police a business, we also performance rated the police officers. Now, when I was a cop, we never really turned anyone away, and I never heard the word civil, and we never, ever served a trespass notice or were involved a trespass notice. But this is what the police do now, because so many offences involve an intent, and the police actually can't investigate anymore. They just seem to be paper pushers, ready just to lock up people on the simple things. And we deal with the unintentional stuff, the things that people do in error, the people that do things without knowing that they're committing offence. And that's it.
Well, it seems that the corruption is not isolated to New Zealand. It's freaking everywhere. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and we'll be right back after the break. American Freedom Radio, and make sure you go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on that big fat help button. Help them get the hell out of the disgusting core exit tornado infested Gulf. And I also wanted to give a quick plug to our fabulous sponsor, GardenMicrobes.com. Go ahead and fight Mother Nature all you want. Try and get your vegetables laid up with vegetable poison, which is supposed to make them grow better, right? But what's the point of trying to grow vegetables if they wind up being big, fat, and juicy, full of poison? Doesn't make much of a sense to me, which is why you should go to GardenMicrobes.com and use natural bacterial action to enrich your soil, help your plants grow, and there's a heck of a lot of other uses for it too. Did you know you can actually spray this stuff on oil stains that you've spilled on your garage floor, and the bacteria will in fact eat it up? Much like the American public eats up the speeches of Barack O'Berry. Let's hope I'm wrong on that case. But in either case, go to GardenMicrobes.com and order yourself a wee bit of that stuff, because it's just so fabulous. And also by doing so, you're supporting real patriots right there in the US of A, in the Lone Star State. of Texas. 8889 microbes. That's 8889 microbes. Or go to gardenmicrobes.com. And I'm sure that you'll enjoy it as much as we enjoy having such a fabulous sponsor. Welcome back to the show. Our special guest is Grace Hayden from Verisure, a ex-police prosecuting sergeant who didn't get corrupted. Quite a rare one. You either get corrupted or you leave. And apparently she was one of the ones who didn't get corrupted and left, as my summation. I could be wrong, though. Grace, welcome back.
Hi. I believe you've got to live with yourself in the end, and I couldn't live myself if I was corrupt.
Well, how can people live with themselves when they're corrupt?
Well, I guess it's the mob mentality. It was really quite interesting. The most sort of interesting thing I ever did at police college was we were the largest group ever to go through, and there were 180 of us. And we did this thing on demonstrations, and they took 20 out to be cops and the rest worked to be the mob. And we had to break through the cordon. And it was just kind of amazing how we got this, that felt, you know, this hatred for the others.
Hey, isn't that the thing about it that I'm really upset about with my police force, who I love, is that they hate us in a certain extent. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we hate you heaps. And we'll be back after the break with more hate speech. Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio. God, I love this network. It's so freaking awesome. Speaking of awesome network, make sure you tune in. Well, continue to tune in after the Vinnie Eastwood Show for the Intel Hub with Shep. Amazing guests all the time. Incredible information. It's basically the new show that everybody should be listening to and talking about, sharing with your friends. I wouldn't afford myself that same respect. Now, our special guest is Grace Hayden from Verisure Private Investigations, and we wanted to talk about police gang mentality. And more to the point, we have a mob mentality when it comes to police versus a crowd. And Grace was just regaling us about one of her experiences on that note.
Yes, I was recapping our experience in police college, where we had 160 cops who were pretending to be demonstrators, having to break through the cordon of 20 police officers who were designated police officers. And what I experienced as part of that mob was that you kind of get taken with the mob. And I think anyone who's in any crowd has to be careful that they're not being sort of overtaken by the desire of the leaders. And this is true in any group of people. And the police wouldn't be any different. So if you are a young police officer and everybody is acting in a particular manner, then you kind of have to conform or be the odd person out, and people do tend to conform. So once the group culture starts getting off the rails, then you'll find more and more people will conform to the lesser standard. Even when I was in the police, we used to say that the police was the greatest gang in the country, because there is a code of honour in there, as there is in any profession, even like lawyers. You just need to look at lawyers. They have in their rules that they will never speak disparagingly of another lawyer. and cops are the same, and accountants will probably be the same. And this, unfortunately, feeds corruption rather than lets it be illustrated. It's a sad thing, really.
What you were saying before also struck a chord with me, how they use the term civil, and now we're civilians. And all this militarization, all those military terms, the fact they walk around in my peaceful little town here in the middle of the day right now, they'll be going out right now to serve the community with bulletproof vests on. Like they're expecting, like I haven't seen anyone pull out a plastic knife, let alone a gun. And they walk, they swaddle around all day, we're tough, yeah, with bulletproof vests on, high-fiving each other. And it's really base mentality. And then when you get them at protests, and I've been to a couple of protests where, you know, not all the people involved on the protest side have been favorable, in my opinion, but the cops just, like, see everyone the same. And just like, yeah, we're going to knock your teeth in, hippie, and, you know, we're going to... It's kind of... I can see how they're all like goose-stepping in line, and like even just I've got a video on put on YouTube, like whacking their batons together at the same time. This is on Simon Street, and they're really getting psyched up. I can see it's all been part of their training, that it's all been dug into them. But what do you think about the militarization of police?
Yes, I guess all of that sort of happened since the Springbok tour, and then of course compounded once we incorporated traffic with the police. But certainly in my day, you know, in the early part of my service, we were there to help the public, whereas now it's become an enforcement unit rather than a police service. And also getting back to that word civil, we seem to push a lot more out into you know, it's your responsibility to go and get a lawyer and prosecute or do something about it because the police don't see it as a crime. I've got a good example of that for a young man who was actually a schizophrenic patient, very, very nice kid. He went out and bought a vehicle and he couldn't get a warrant of fitness for it. So he took it back to the guy and he never saw the vehicle again. So I told him to go to the police and report it as stolen, and the police told him it was civil. So he then got told to go away, and he came back to me, and we did a few inquiries, and we went back, and again, we got told it was civil. This happened four times, and in the end, I managed to show that we actually had a car gang involved, and this was a repeated thing. The police then took the complaint, and the guy was arrested, and he got his money back. But when people have to go to the police station four times to report an offence, there is something wrong. But the reason this happens is because we want to keep our level of offending down. Therefore, we turn back a lot more people at the front counter than we ever used to. The other thing we've done is we've actually closed the police stations. It used to be open 24 hours a day. Now, if you look at a place like Auckland, you'd probably have three stations, perhaps four stations that are open 24/7, but the rest are sort of 9 to 4. Now, given that most people are at work between those hours, when do you report your offences? And so we've made offences harder to report. Therefore, we only deal with the ones that the police come across. Therefore, the statistics are up and we look more efficient, when in reality we are far less efficient.
Hold on a second. This strikes a chord with me, is that fear of crime is going up and up and up, and yet actual crime is going down and down and down. Now, perhaps the fact that the fear of crime is up is because the crime is up, and the reason why the statistics don't reflect it is because the police won't investigate or even allow complaints to come through.
Certainly right, and we play with statistics. The last Labor government was an absolute kingpin at playing with statistics. And I've often heard it say that the statistics is like a girl in a bikini. What you see is interesting, but what it conceals is vital. And the police deal with statistics all the time, and they manipulate them by stopping people from reporting matters. And if you can only report the matters which the police are able to solve, then of course their clearance rate goes up.
Now, this is something that we wanted to talk about. A friend of mine and a friend of yours, I believe, Penny Bright, talks about New Zealand being the least corrupt country on earth, and how that statement is just a complete farce. because of incidences like these, the Corruption Perception Index is how they classify New Zealand as the least corrupt country on earth. But of course, because of underreporting and the huge amount of corruption, and also we don't have any internal affairs, to my knowledge. It's all goes through the completes, the police independent complaints authority, which to my mind isn't independent at all.
Yes, and it's so right, Vinny. But what we do is we have lots and lots of brick walls and lots of denial. And it was quite funny because I was with Penny when we applied to join the Transparency International, who give the ratings of the Perception Index. I was the first one to apply to join Transparency International before Vince Seymour and Penny. And on my application, I put former police sergeant, member of the Certified Fraud Examiners Association, a licensed private investigator. The reply came, declined. Now, I would have thought that with my experience and background, I would have been the right kind of person for an organisation. So I actually went down to Wellington with Penny and Vince to the AGM because their documentation said at the time that you could have a review of any declinature at the AGM. Well, we were told to leave the building or we'd be arrested. Now, I didn't push the envelope and I wasn't arrested, but I did manage to get into a side room where a group of the members of Transparency International were waiting to go into the meeting, all with their sherry glasses in hand, all looking very much the more senior level of New Zealanders who are the so-called elite, the ones that have been in the executive positions. And I came to the conclusion that these people were there to keep a firm lid on their past, so that the rot didn't spill out. There's an awful lot of things done in New Zealand with pretenses. And I have come to conclusion that New Zealand has to be the most corrupt, because a country that denies that any corruption occurs and pretends that it doesn't happen and prosecutes people for exposing corruption has to be the most corrupt of them all.
Well, you really sound like my favourite police officer right now.
And you know why that is, Will? Because she's not a police officer anymore.
And you know why that also is? I always, you know, this is a secret. This is a personal secret of mine. No, but I always wanted to be a private investigator. I don't know if I had this, like, cool, like, Miami Vice image of it or something. Like, cruising
just
around.
Just imagine Will with a moustache.
Well, it's funny you say that, man, because I currently have a charge against me, being brought against me by the head of a forensics team in Howick and Eastern, the Howick and Eastern Police, who claims that I, amongst other things, have a moustache. And get around like some, he describes me as some Mexican gangster in his submissions. And I said to the sergeant, I said, this is obviously a case of mistaken identity. And the cop's like, nah, sounds right to me. That's a vague description of you. I said, I've never had facial hair in my life. Yeah. but anyway, no, I always thought to myself, well, that'll be a good job. And I never quite understood why someone would have to be a police officer to do such. Because, frankly, with some of the officers I saw, I thought, wow, they couldn't investigate their way out of a paper bag, you know. but that's just the ones I come across.
Yeah, yeah. It reminds me of this incident that I had in Dunedin where my flatmates stole a whole bunch of radio and stereo equipment and that kind of stuff. And I knew their first and last name, and I knew exactly where they were going to. They were going to Westport in the South Island. You know, it was a very small town, and his parents were in the phone book and everything like that. He was going to stay with them. Went down to the local constable, gave him all the details and that kind of stuff. And we started to get into a conversation about cannabis and how the law doesn't work, etc., etc. And he said, well, you know, it doesn't really matter. I guess we'll just have to agree to disagree. And I was just like, okay, great. You know, this is the last thing I'd heard of him. 5 years later, I get... yes, this is the wonderful story about the police. 5 years later, I get a letter from the police and I think, oh, God, what have I done wrong? And it turns out that they have, in fact, caught and prosecuted and ordered the person to pay back reparations for the $6,000 worth of stereo equipment that he took. They ordered him to pay back $130.
No, that was official.
After 5 years.
It's a general premise that we're talking about here too, though. Like you're saying, police used to serve their communities. They used to, you know, give people the time down the street, check on old ladies, make sure they cross the road okay, and things like that. And you still see some good cops doing that. I've seen cops changing tyres. Good, honest guys. But then there's a lot who are just like, you know, you're my slave. You answer my questions now or else I'm going to throw you in a room. And I see people and they bully the guys around, big tough guys who would, you know, big tough guys who would want to fight you down the bar, and they cower like little girls at the heels of these cops. And the cop walks in the bar, you know, you see them all sort of scurry away. And I sort of stand there and just say, you know, what's your problem, officer? If he's throwing his weight around. And other citizens, even though they're sort of twice my size and stuff, they're like, how do you do that? How do you talk to a police officer like that? Well, because a cop's not a god. They're just like anyone else. But some of them want to be treated like they're you know, Ramses II walking in the room.
Well, and now, thanks to Crusher Collins, our new police minister, is trying to pass a law where if you assault a police officer, if they're out of uniform and not on duty, it's still counted as assaulting a police officer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, maybe they should do their job outside duty too. Because I tell you what, I could solve half the methamphetamine problems in the town I live in half a day. I mean, I just, you know, go around kicking in doors with the warrants. You know, it's real simple. But they don't, because they want to perpetuate crime to keep themselves in a little cozy job, sitting here lapping up in latte land. And that's what they want to do. I mean...
Well, yeah. I think it comes down to the fact that what's happened is that when I joined the police years ago, there was a waiting list of about 2 years for people to join the police. It was seen as something that people wanted to belong to. Now you just need to look at the perks that they show and the recruitment drive. The police are not seen as favourably as they used to. Therefore, the good people are not being attracted into it like they were. And they're having to dig deeper for their recruits. They still have an awful lot of good recruits go in there. But it's the standard of competence has dropped. And also the mere fact that it's all being driven by creating revenue for the government rather than a service to the community and keeping it crime-free. That's where the focus has changed, yeah. And we've gone off the rails.
The government are our servants, the cops are our slaves, not the other way around. They should be respected, but yeah, they're meant to serve us. And yet all I see is the opposite. I see people afraid of them. They need to be afraid of us. That's the difference between liberty and tyranny.
Yeah.
The service need to be afraid of the people they're meant to be serving. And that's the only way there is for it. People don't understand that. That's radical to some people.
Yeah, and the other thing is the police rely very heavily on the public to provide them with information. Now, I found myself in this position where I just don't bother reporting things to the police anymore because it causes me more hassle, puts you under the spotlight, whereas the information that I could give them would actually help them solve things. But
I'd never help them. That's why I'd want to be a private investigator. I'd never help them. I'd just go and show them all up.
Yes, indeed. And Will will look marvellous in his new private investigator moustache and aviator sunglasses with his with his Miami Vice suit. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. Our special guest is Grace Hayden from Very Sure Private Investigations. We'll be right back on AmericanFreedomRadio.com.
Must be some kind of way out of here.
Set the non-corrupt cop to the rest.
There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. With Will on American Freedom Radio. We've been having a somewhat awesome conversation with our, well, marvelous, far more awesome than I could have even dreamed, Grace Hayden from Verisure Investigations Limited at verisure.co.nz. I'm not sure if you contract out to the United States, love, but anyway, we have a little bit of a subject to cover here, and it's one of the darker subjects, and, you know, people don't like to talk about it and whatever, but it needs to be done because, well, wow. I feel like it. Now, suicides in society. You were talking about the lack of action by police, in fact, contributing to a high suicide rate in New Zealand. Could you elaborate on this, Grace?
Yes. Well, we do everything on the roads in the name of road deaths. You know, we've got to give you a ticket because you've gone 61 because we have too many deaths on the road, and we must do this because we have too many deaths on the road. But if death was such a priority to prevent death, why are the police not doing anything about the suicide rate? And because there are so many people who go to the police with their problems and the police turn them away, these people, you know, they might be sued by someone to keep them quiet because they are exposing corruption. They might go to the police because they have got a problem. They might be dealing with the police on a matter where they're being maliciously prosecuted. And it brings about depression, it brings about suicide, and it increases the number of people who die by suicide, which incidentally exceeds the number that we have killed on our roads every year. Yet suicide is a taboo subject, and there seems to be a belief that if someone hears that someone's committed suicide, we're all going to jump off a bridge. Rather than give an education program where people can go and find help, where they actually find that they are supported. But all we seem to do is pull the rug out from underneath those who are vulnerable and expose them to suicide even more. And if the police were to do their job properly and fairly, I believe the suicide rate would go down, because the suicide rate is probably proportional to the injustice that we suffer in our society.
And considering New Zealand has the highest suicide rate in the developed world, so it's quite a statement to make.
They'll just say, look, that's not our department, we can't solve everything. But, yeah, I think that's a major problem with the police too. It's all so divided up. Look, I don't make the rules, okay? I don't make the law. I'm like, well, you work for them, you enforce it, you must believe in it. And I don't have anything to do with that. Well, quit your job then. You don't believe in what you're doing, leave. Simple.
Yeah, you effer.
No, what is it about people like that? Like, you're not working in a dairy here. You're not trying to kill ours. You're not meant to be anyway. You're meant to be doing something that matters. And this is one thing that bugs me about police too. You're going to go out there and point the finger at people and take the moral high ground and judge, yeah? Then what, apart from that little checkered ring around your head, what gives you that authority? I mean, they don't research anything. They don't learn any historical reference points. They don't, you know, a lot of them anyway. And it's like, if you're going to start pointing the finger at people, what qualifies you? You better be sure of yourself and who you are and what you're about. Instead, they're just like hollow vessels of people wandering around throwing judgment at everyone.
Well, I learned something.
Go ahead, Grace.
I learned something very recently about how my job and the way I do it has changed from how what I call the Mr. Plods and the police do it. There was a society which had a employee, and they suspected that the employee's references weren't correct. So this guy came along. He was an ex-police sergeant, and he took 74,000 off them to go and speak to people, including people in the United States, to confirm that this degree was actually obtained through an online university. Now, it proved to me that these guys still go about doing the Mr. Plod, but face-to-face, pedantic, rather than using common sense and modern technology. I could have done the whole job for them for several thousand dollars, perhaps even less than $1,000, by using my fingers, by using my knowledge, by knowing where to go to find this information. And it's just absolutely ridiculous that anyone should spend $74,000 proving someone's degree was false.
Yeah, that seems pretty excessive, you know, like it's like buying a toilet seat for $25,000, you know. I don't care how warm you want your bum to be, it just ain't worth it. You know, I'm where is this all going to? You know, I mean, I think that the police really have this structure imposed upon them to allow corruption to go ahead so that society itself will develop and lose its respect for the police. In so doing, it allows the police even more justification for hating the public because they've forced the public to hate them. And so it's very natural for the police to kind of retreat in on themselves. And I thought to myself, well, isn't this one of the main hallmarks of cowardice, is that you don't understand what it is that you're doing if you are too afraid to accept the truth of your position. And perhaps, this is just a theory that I have here, that some of the worst police officers are just the biggest cowards, and they don't get exposed because they're so threatening with their gang mentality behind them, you know? What's your perspective on this?
Well, the thing is, there's a real bullying mentality in New Zealand. And I had an experience with a friend of ours who came home and found their block wall had gone off her boundary and the neighbours had pulled it down. So we went across and very nicely went up to the neighbours and asked where the wall had gone. And he told us to get lost in most uncertain terms. And then he threw dirt and dust and things at it. So we called the police. And the police responded by getting us to exchange trespass notices. And it seems to me that the police, they look for simple ways out rather than dealing with the situation. And they really are just encouraging bullying. As going back to my earlier story, of the guy with the road rage, that person was a bully. He engaged the police, who then said, we will support the bully because his story sounds good and that way we get $150 out of it. And because we don't use common sense and because the police are so revenue driven, they have to be careful that they don't come out supporting the wrong party. And they often
do. That's one thing I found about their so-called investigations. I could literally get someone's registration, get a general description of them, blue baseball cap, 5'9", 100 kgs, something. Now, I could get a rough description. I could say he cut in front of me, bloody just about run over a child. I could make up a whole big story, have that person lose their license, and cost them a whole lot of money, even if it's completely fabricated. I could cost them a whole load of money just because I don't like them. And that's what people do, I swear. Yes. And we've got this because we've got this society that makes cops out of citizens via this complaint process. When it works both ways, they can also silence you via the complaint process, but then when they want to take you seriously, when you can make them some money, they do. And so you're elevated to a cop position. And they just take your testimony and you contest it with the police and they say, look, I'm just going to arrest you or I'm just going to charge you here, and then the judge can sort that out. The cop, you know, a cop doesn't want to get involved in the details. The details are their job. They just say, look, we're going to put you in a cell and then we'll leave it for the judge to work out.
Yes, well, I had an interesting one where I had to find a director and a liquidator of a company, and both of them had been fabricated. They didn't exist. And, of course, I wasn't to know that, and I went round to the company that this guy was supposed to own, and the people who had fabricated them decided that they would take me to court for harassment. So one man who I'd never spoken to or been near actually succeeded in getting a restraining order against me. At the same time, they put three advertisements in a Chinese newspaper, one offering a car, a late model car, for sale for a very, very reasonable price, which saw my telephones ring absolutely hot, end for end, all day. The second one was that my house was up for rent, and I've got a rather large house, and it was at a bargain basement price. So every Chinese person this side of the Black Stump came calling, and there was an advertisement for an accounting position, which saw these CVs come through on my fax. I took that through to the police as criminal harassment because I, through my own investigations, proved that the same guy had placed these advertisements. The police did nothing, whereas defending myself in court cost me $49,000.
And
I know, and I managed to get the Ministry of Economic Developments onto these people, and they have now been charged. One of them has been charged and been found guilty of fraudulently running a business, and she continues to run the business. This is the airline industry, and the other guy, a guy called Terry Hay, has been charged with 22 counts of fabricating evidence of the High Court. And he scarpered off to Honolulu and he's running a business from over there, being a fugitive in our courts, but still pursuing me through the courts of New Zealand and beating me up with lawyers.
So many good New Zealanders are having these same issues. I hear this, like, similar themes amongst a whole range of people. Vinny knows a lot of people like this. We've all had these things happen to ourselves. We need a nexus point for this particular issue. Outside of all the media issues and everything else, but for this particular issue, a nexus point for all New Zealanders to pull together and lawyers that feel the cause. I had a good lawyer come and defend me for free once. Any lawyer that's helped me has helped me out of their own free will, which has been really amazing. And so there are good people out there like this. A guy called Brett Ravelich, 021 Sue Cops, his number in New Zealand here, helped me out once. But if we could put all these people under one tent, it would be a great. And we could call it scumwatch.co.nz or something like that. And we could hammer these guys and not have individuals have to pay $50,000 because a bunch of trash want to give them the runaround. Something
ruthless,
needs to be done.
Ruthless, hardcore, we're going to wipe out corruption wherever we find it, .com, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. We've got our own heavies and our own lawyers and our own everything. Little secret society to combat theirs, but ours will be out in the open.
Yeah. An open secret society. Hey, what about Māori sovereign police? A couple of the boys down in Hamilton, they've been getting verification through their hapus and various tribal authorities and such like this, where they're actually capable of enforcing the law to a certain extent. And I thought to myself, you know what? That's an interesting side of the coin, isn't it? Having separate police forces, one police force to enforce the laws on the other side of the police force, which don't follow them.
Yes, but we've already got a separate law enforcement authority called the RNZSPCA. And that is another very interesting topic because the the law was actually written by a former director of the RNZ SPCA, and it gives people, the inspectors in the SPCA, the power to prosecute anyone, and the funds that they receive go in their own pockets. Now, this is an international trend, and there was a couple in England who actually were fined by the SPCA over there because their parrot and cockatiel were allegedly sexually frustrated. And this is the kind of problem we're going to have, is that it's all subjective in the eye of the inspector. And if you can make $300-$400 by prosecuting someone and they can't afford to defend it, it's open slather. And our government has allowed that legislation through.
Yep, they've done it. You're listening to the Funny Eastwood Show with Will. And we'll be right back after the break.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
Show with Will on American Freedom Radio. And again, God, I love this network. It's so awesome. Our special guest at the moment is Grace Hayden from Verisure Private Investigations at verisure.co.nz. If you want to have a look at her stuff. Now, the last thing that we wanted to get into was how people don't listen to information and they focus on the completely irrelevant. And you had a wee story about a typo, Grace. Fill us in.
Yes, well, I had a client and I gave them 3 pages of mind-blowing information, and all they could focus on was the typo. And I think it was the word "the," which sometimes I spell H-T-E or something like that. And it just means that they just miss the point completely, and they're obviously not looking for the information which could make a difference to their case going forward.
Yeah, yeah, and it's strange, like, especially in the truth movement, you know, when you try to tell people that 9/11 is an inside job, you try and tell the people that the vaccines are contaminated with viruses and cancer and all of this kind of stuff, they think to themselves, and that's all they think, you know, because that's the only brainwave they have, is the
I'm too retarded to actually think about something that somebody told me. It challenges my worldview, so therefore I'm going to ignore it. You know, carbon dioxide is one of the 4 building blocks of life. Let's tax it. You know.
Yes. Well, it's like, you know, people who want to find out about their husbands, you know, it's why I don't do matrimonial, because they don't really want to know. And when you do find the information, you're the one that's the liar.
And yeah, I was thinking, that must be the majority of your work, would it not be? Is it people wanting to investigate their spouse?
This is where the misconception is. I don't do any of that. I work with companies. I give people the information that they... Well, so many get the information after things have gone wrong, and I'm saying to people, you can get the information before you go into a relationship. And I'm not talking about husband and wife relationships. I'm talking about people taking on shareholders, directors, contracts, employees, give credit. And the time to find out about people is before you sign on the dotted line. And that way you can go into the situation warts and all. But
and can you give any trade secrets how you find out such info on people? Or is it all 80% of intelligence is mainstream sort of thing?
Well, yeah, there's no secret to it. I actually run classes showing people how they can get information off the internet. It's just knowing the system, knowing what to look for, knowing where to go. I don't do any surveillance. I don't sit up trees or behind bushes, and I don't drive a Ferrari. I drive a Corolla. you know, it's this whole stereotype, and I don't fit it at all. I'm more like the number one ladies detective agency than anything else, but at the same time, I don't cut any crocodiles open either. It's basic being pedantic about the information you have in front of you, going through it, and just diligently checking it off, sort of saying, right, is this one true? Is that one true? And it's not rocket science.
It's funny you talk about surveillance, because the local police now are actually sort of afraid to pull me over. For a while there, sort of 18 months ago, I had this incident where I got sick of them, so I got a megaphone out and remonstrated peacefully outside one of their homes and got arrested for that, and then the judge threw it out. It's freedom of speech.
Yes.
And I haven't released a video of that because I think that could be pushing it. But anyway, they found out...
I want to see this video now.
They found out I was recording them all the time, so that like they would come up to me, or they'd pull me over the side of the road like for a random breath check, and they'd say, oh, I'm probably under surveillance now, aren't I, Will? So I said, oh, I said, look, you never know. I just keep them on their trot. You know, and that's the way to have
them. Keep them on their trotters.
Like in parting, I'm not against the police. It's the police to me are the same as the military. I hate how they've killed over 1 million civilians, according to Reuters, January 2008 in Iraq. They've now killed probably 2 million, but there was 1 million back then. I hate how people follow orders and think that's loyalty and patriotism and everything else. Patriotism is dissent. And questioning and wanting to know the truth of a matter, not just goose-stepping behind your Führer. And that's what the police, individuals in the police and individuals in the military do, and they're proud of it. And so I'm not against the individual so much as the system, but also an individual, where do you draw the line as to who's culpable? I don't like the fact that cops can pass the buck to politicians, then politicians can pass the buck to cops and say we're not on the street, and I don't like that. There's got to be a responsibility somewhere, but instead there's none in the system, but all of us are responsible for everything we do, and we're going to be fined and prosecuted and held accountable every single day for it. That's what the problem with the system.
Yes, that's the secret. The equation I gave earlier, if the cops were as accountable to their ethical values and their standards as we are made accountable to the laws that they enforce, then we would see a change. It's just that they protect themselves, that they have brick walls up in the way, and they have no accountability. And that is why my corruption equation works, and it shouldn't.
Indeed, and that's a good place to leave it. Grace, thank you so much for coming on this edition of the Vinny Eastwood Show. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Friday, 7:56 a.m. local New Zealand time, broadcasting live from the future. Thank you very much for listening to us today. And if you'd like to check out Grace, go to verisure.co.nz, verisure.co.nz, and you'll be able to check it out. And also, VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and if you want to report any corrupt police, go to I Hate Corrupt Police and I Wish Somebody Would Do Something About Them, but they probably won't.com. And we will see you again tomorrow. Thank you very much to the listeners and also our great team here at the Vinnie Eastwood Show for doing everything that it is that you do. And we'll catch you tomorrow.